This is Capital Insider, taking you inside politics, policy, government, and elections in Oklahoma. I'm Dick Pryor with Quorum Call publisher Sean Ashley. Sean, the general election is over, and the Oklahoma results will be certified by the State Election Board Tuesday. You've been closely following the legislative races. There were no real surprises, and nothing much changed.
There really weren't. No House or Senate incumbents lost in the general election. Open seats previously held by Republicans stayed in Republican hands, and open seats that had been held by Democrats remained Democratic. But there will be new faces in the legislature, 17 in the House and 14 in the Senate.
Something that stands out about this election cycle is that the big shifts occurred in the primaries, not the general election.
That's right. Seven Republican incumbents lost their bids for re-election in the primary and the primary runoff, including the top two leaders who were on the ballot, Senate Majority Floor Leader Greg McCourtney, who also was the Senate Republicans Caucus's nominee to become the next Senate President Pro Tem, and House Appropriations and Budget Chair Kevin Wallace. It was nearly the exact opposite for the Democrats. Only one incumbent Democrat, Representative A.J. Pittman, drew a primary opponent. She won that race in the primary and retained her seat.
There was a lot of energy and money spent in judicial retention campaigns, specifically the retention voting for three Oklahoma Supreme Court justices. Two were retained, just barely, James Edmondson and Noma Gurridge. Yvonne Cogger was ousted, just barely. Each of them received about 50% of the vote. The other judges on the ballot were retained with 59 to 64% of the vote. So were the lower percentages for the Supreme Court justices about the justices themselves, or was it something else?
I think the answer is both. First, Edmondson, Gurridge, and Cogger were in the majorities of several decisions that, put simply, conservatives did not like, such as the decision disallowing the St. Isidore Virtual Catholic School, rulings reversing or significantly limiting several abortion bills passed by the legislature and signed by Governors Mary Fallon and Kevin Stitt, and several decisions regarding the state's workers' compensation system. Second, I think this was a test case, if I can borrow words from a question Justice Cogger asked during the St. Isidore hearing. Some of the same groups involved in the campaigns against the Supreme Court justices have been trying for years to get the legislature to put a state question on the ballot that would eliminate the Judicial Nominating Commission, the bipartisan panel that recommends candidates to the governor for judicial appointments. They would like to see that placed in the hands of the governor, but that requires a constitutional amendment approved by a vote of the people, and that effort has failed on the basis of bipartisan opposition. I don't know what to conclude from the results. Two of the justices were retained, but just barely. And perhaps ironically, Cogger's replacement will come from the recommendations of the Judicial Nominating Commission. But that will give Stitt four of the nine appointments on the court, nearly a majority.
Republicans retained each Oklahoma congressional seat, and all 77 counties voted for Donald Trump for president. No surprise there. Do you see the national Republican red wave affecting anything in Oklahoma?
It could. Republicans controlling the U.S. House, the U.S. Senate, and the presidency, it seems likely we will not see as many disagreements between the state and the federal government, which has led to lawsuits and various bills considered by the legislature. Second, Oklahoma has filled a number of important positions in presidential administrations, including that of President Donald Trump. That could happen again. Published and broadcast reports indicate Trump plans to start announcing important appointments soon. So next week, we could be talking about who's leaving and who may replace them.
And when does the new legislature begin?
Both chambers will convene for the constitutionally required organizational day on January 7th. But before then, the Senate will hold its swearing-in ceremony Wednesday at 2 p.m. and the House on November 20th at 10 a.m.
Thank you, Sean.
You're very welcome.
For more information, go to quorumcall.online. You can find audio and transcripts at kgou.org. And look for Capital Insider where you get podcasts. Until next time, with Sean Ashley, I'm Dick Pryor.
No matter what happens in Washington, the NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.